All right, welcome back, everybody. Here we are once again, and I actually just counted and did the math off air. Dom, we are here for our 16th season Yikes. Of Survivor coverage. How are you doing?
Well, now that you told me that, I feel a lot older, but I'm still doing okay, despite your best efforts.
Yeah, man. And actually, factoring in having done Heroes versus Villains and now a bit of Fiji on Patreon, this is our 18th season of Survivor coverage, so we are getting very close to the halfway point.
I can't even process that mentally. That's terrifying.
Yeah, that maybe should have been a revelation we had off air to better comprehend. But nonetheless, excited as usual to be back in here talking about a fresh season. But Dom, let's start there because we did not do a preseason cast assessment podcast this time around. And more on that quickly, but I just want to find out from you, because we didn't talk a whole lot about this before the season actually began airing. What were your expectations leading up to this premiere?
I tried not to have any, so low would be the answer there. And I guess given that it exceeded them, but for as much as this is a new or fresh season, it felt like we've seen all of this 100 times before. There was nothing here that was really exceptional or really got people talking.
So after David versus Goliath, let's rewind even further than that. I'll rewind to the point of when we first heard about the Edge of Extinction twist. I was immediately a little nervous about the kind of range of outcomes this season could potentially have. And I was, over the course of the months between then and the week of the premiere, pretty consistently not super looking forward to this season to nearly the same extent that I generally do with a Survivor season. But after David versus Goliath, for at least a week or two leading up to the premiere, because that season was so strong, I was really allowing myself to be more open, at least, to the possibility that, hey, there's no reason, at least that we've seen yet, to be totally writing this off by any stretch. And for all we know, we thought David versus Goliath sounded very dumb on paper, too, and it ended up being a consensus home run kind of season. I was still, like I said, leaving the door open for this to potentially come in and blow me away. And I was
say that with David versus Goliath, it wasn't because of David versus Goliath, right? It was given all of the expectations that there were surrounding the season. And I guess the theme didn't help those. But as always, that theme disappeared promptly. And after that, we just had a solid season of Survivor with a great cast. Here you have an elephant in the room in the china shop, just smashing everything around and forcing people to pay attention to it. And unless Edge of Extinction just disappears somehow, which is not happening anytime soon, this will be a talking point for the rest of the season, I imagine. And maybe not only for this season. I know there are some theories about that too.
Oh, wow. Interesting. So, yeah, you are right, though, that this is a bigger, probably, obstacle to overcome. And it is not like a Grodner sort of situation like they have on Big Brother, where she can just call it off if it's not working after the first 3 weeks and act like nothing ever happened. But because of just the general low expectations entering David versus Goliath and how vastly exceeded those were, I wanted to maintain kind of an open mind about, you know, maybe I can show up and be really impressed by this premiere and this cast. The casting last season was certainly one of the strongest we've seen in a while. And I came in to this episode totally cold, not knowing anything about any of the new players. And I liked the returnees that we had in store. And I was able to maintain that kind of relative optimism up until the point where specifically Joe came up onto the boat. And it's not Joe in a I don't want to see that guy ever again kind of way. It really just rang so false to me, and it almost just it felt like it just hit me like a ton of bricks actually seeing it in action, seeing this guy get onto the boat with 14 new players. And I think with specifically Joe and Aubrey, the reason I felt that way, it's not out of any kind of disrespect towards either of those players at all. It's out of total respect for everything they've already accomplished on Survivor. To me, if you had said Joe or Aubrey is going to be in the mix for the next big mega all-stars, like potential legends season, I would think that story checked out. And anyone who is past that threshold, which, you know, due respect to Kelly and David Wright, I would say I personally would not be comfortable with having play with new players.
Why the two of them in particular then? Because I know you're a big fan and are a big fan, as far as I still know, of Aubrey. Joe, maybe not so much based on our prior discussions, but it feels like it's not based on, again, the two of them as people, but more just what they represent for the franchise in a larger sense.
I think what it is they both have two very solid runs under their belt already. So the
only difference there being Kelly has one very solid run and right. one run that was cut tragically short.
But I think that's fine to put her then in with new players, the same way I would say I am not blanketly against putting even three-time players in with new players. I had no issue with putting Jonathan Penner in because he had one pretty solid run and one run that he got really unlucky on. And I don't think he's the kind of caliber of player that is beyond the point of ridiculous to me. But with specifically Joe and Aubrey, it felt like they had, for my money, done too much in Survivor to this point in their careers if I were a producer, to be able to even say with a straight face, we should let them play with new players.
When you said, my heart sank the moment that Joe got on that boat, what I thought you were getting at was when you heard the voiceovers of people saying, I've always imagined Kelly as my best friend, and I've always had, Joe's always been my Survivor crush, and I've idolized Aubrey, and I love David Wright, as if they're not mere mortals, they're some kind of gods descended from above, and the idea of taking a shot at them is off limits somehow. Which
that did
be,
tilt me. Right, sorry, go ahead.
Which seemed to be the case for some of them. And you're right that there's this inevitable imbalance or power dynamic there that really can't be overcome. Maybe it is better if, I guess, to take your idea to its natural conclusion, instead of having people as capable as Kelly or Joe or Aubrey or David, just have random returnees plucked from previous seasons of Survivor. So we'll get Gillian Larson in there. We'll have just like some random like man from season 20. Let's just get Matt Quinlan, just dial him up, just get him on Survivor again. That might actually be conceptually interesting, even if I would be the first to grab a pitchfork if they ever actually did that on a Survivor season.
So to disagree with a hypothetical point about what I know you are joking in saying, I would not want it to be people down, I guess all due respect, as low as like the joke candidates of Gillian Larson and Matt Quinlan. But we have talked, or it has come up many times over the years, that the perfect kind of returnee level to put in with new players, I think, was Bobby John. I think that is the exact kind of guy you want in there.
Yeah, Bobby John was great, but I don't know how much of that is Bobby John versus him occupying exactly the right position in the larger metagame. I think we're just so swept up in how great Bobby John can be at times.
It's someone who is certainly able to provide at least some sense of leadership, but is definitely not going to just steamroll the game. And I think we've seen so many times now, and Redemption Island is the most glaring instance, but look at, first of all, just literally any season with returning players in the history of Survivor, not only Survivor, but Big Brother as well. Like Jesse Godders goes in, and he was not a remarkable player his first time, and he just steamrolls a house full of new players. Coach Wade goes on after not being a remarkable player either of his first two times, and has the game by a stranglehold, in a stranglehold by the time like day four rolls around. It is tried and true over and over and over again that these returnees have a pretty ludicrous advantage, and I would say, even Kelly Wentworth and David Wright, having the resumes that they have, might be pushing it for me, but I am certainly at the point where I am absolutely willing to draw like a line in the sand and say that putting the Joey Amazings and Aubrey's Bracco out there with new players is ridiculous to me.
What I'm hearing from that is that you want a Coach versus Jesse Godder season, and I'm completely down for that. I would be on board.
I think that would be very, it's certainly ratings gold, if nothing else. It may not be the best Survivor season we've ever seen play out, but it would be must see.
I'll ask you this then, because this season does differ from some of those previous examples in that instead of having two returning players, we have four, so two on each tribe. one of the issues that keeps cropping up when you have Rob versus Russell or even Stephanie versus Bobby John is that returning player inevitably, despite their best efforts in some cases, becomes the focus of the tribe and everything revolves around them, and it quickly becomes either you're with me or you're against me. You know, when you have four instead, like you would hope that either in the best case those two returnees go after each other, or you have some kind of cold war develop where they stick around for a long time, but there's this uneasy truce which then turns into outright conflict, and the question becomes who's going to strike first and when. Or even if it is, as we saw this episode, where the two returnees in the majority and there are some obvious outcasts who have even less hope than they would on a normal season of getting back in, because those returnees are there to teach everyone best practice and have them follow through on the plan. Some of the kids in this family feel closer to mum, and some of the kids feel closer to dad. And eventually, when the messy divorce happens, that's going to become an issue. And we'll see all of these newbies who have been able to coast by just by following the returning players will suddenly be forced to make a very difficult choice.
Right. And I do think that this is a cast where, at least based on what we saw in the premiere, we saw at least a couple of people voice the idea of, oh, I recognize what big threats the returnees constantly are when they get a chance to play in seasons like this, and it's going to be on my mind to have, you know, eventually doing something about that, and you know, to kind of counterbalance the, oh my god, I can't believe I get to play with Joey Amazing and Kelly Wentworth that we got understandably as the returnees were introduced in the first place. But Dom, I want to hear your take on the over-under on returnees being in the main game come merge time. And I think the line is clearly 3.5, over-under. Yes. 3.5.
I think I'm actually going to take the over. There is a chance that Eric manages to gather his forces and go after Aubrey, or that like she's going to make a move against Joe ahead of time, or something interesting could transpire. But by and large, I think it's the safe move for everybody involved, including the returnees themselves, which I think is going to be the deciding factor here, to use the others as shields and just let everyone get to the merge and then fight it out and hope that you can just sneak back under the parapet and let them kill each other.
Right. Normally, for the sake of podcasting, I would at least make an argument to disagree with you. There's no way I would take the under there. I feel very good at this point about all four of them being there at the merge, unless they swap horrifically somehow.
Let's get into this marooning then, because this will be another in a series of maroonings. And this one, in fact, was not fully planned ahead of time. So I believe the story, based on Dalton Ross's fantastic piece about what goes into a survivor marooning, an extensive behind the scenes, which we'll link in the show notes and is definitely worth a perusal when you have time. They were planning something a little different. And the reason that this boat comes back into play yet again is because those plans fell through and this boat just happened to be in the area. So they drafted that back in. So it's not just laziness. It's not them just going back to the same well over and over again. It was a product of desperation this time.
Okay, I didn't end up reading that Dalton Ross article that I saw probably 50 times on my Twitter timeline and kept saying, oh, I'll check that out later tonight, and then just have never gotten around to it. Anything major from the marooning stand out to you?
So there was a secret advantage, which in this case seemed a little on the nose when it's a piece of paper with the words secret advantage written on it. So that was snapped up by Ron. Apparently, when they did the introduction segment, Jeff asked Wardog what his name was, and he said it was Wardog. And then he went down the line to Rick, and Rick said something like, well, Jeff, this is awkward because my name is Wardog too, which suddenly got a laugh out of me when I read it, and hopefully from the people amassed there on the boat. But Rick seems to be off to a good start, as does Wardog, actually, who I did not have high hopes for, but he seems to be settling in pretty well so far.
What's Wardog's actual name?
Pass. Couldn't tell you.
I have no idea what it is either, but yeah, he seems to be out there. My thought about Wardog was, it really seems like anyone who looks and sounds that much like Tony Vlachos is going to be facing such an uphill battle once they're actually out there. It seems like it's very helpful in getting cast on seasons of Survivor lately, but how optimistic are you, I guess, about Wardog?
Not very, and it's interesting that he said he was trying to manage perceptions of him, and he didn't want to tell anyone he was a lawyer because lawyers are seen as smart and wily and they tend to get targeted, when instead he's showing up as a carbon copy of Tony Switches. Definitely not a concern to anyone out there whatsoever.
Yeah, and I will certainly be saving a spot for Wardog on whenever we do the updated lawyer rankings, at least provisionally. He seems like he could be in the mix.
Do law students qualify, or are they out of bounds?
I think Cochran got number one, right? I don't think he's ever tried a case in his life.
Sure, but he at least graduated law school. He is officially a lawyer. I don't know if he has been admitted to the bar or anything, but I
So
don't know.
not only are you selling War Dog's chances on Survivor, you also are assuring the podcast audience that he's not going to finish law school.
Yeah, definitely not that. He could never be a cop. I'm sure he sucked at being in the military too. Just all facets of life. We're selling shares in Wardog.
I was also wondering, I could not even place a rough age on War Dog.
Yeah, he could be anywhere from like 28 all the way up through 42.
Right, that I could not. I was sitting there from certain angles. I was like, "Is this guy younger than me?" And then other angles, it seemed like, "Oh, impossible."
Yeah, that's an impressive level of hair loss for someone who's younger than you, but he can find a way, I'm sure.
Well, I'm assuming he shaves his head and it will grow in a bit over the course of the season.
We can only hope.
I guess we'll track that story as it progresses. One other kind of
No, we
aesthetic.
could have a watchdog, a wardog. What? How are we gonna resolve that?
I feel like the British accent is really helpful for that one, where you can just like drop the R and get away with it, because I said the hard R in Warch Dog is no good.
Okay, so whatever that ends up being, we'll check in on that periodically over the course of the season.
Please don't. The other aesthetic thing that I had noted from this episode was Aubrey is not wearing glasses, which really shook me. And obviously, I still know who Aubrey is, but it occurred to me there have got to be a huge number of people who did not recognize Aubrey because she didn't have glasses on.
Yeah, I don't know so much among the cast. I don't know if she
No,
has
no,
any hope of going incognito there, but yeah,
no.
I
Great
wonder if
try.
you,
Good offer.
yeah, if you took the average Survivor viewer, the man and or woman on the street, I don't know what percentage of them are recognizing Aubrey without hearing her speak, just based on that initial camera zoom.
Yeah, and then I guess the other aesthetic note we need to address, Dom, is where are you on Joey Amazing's mustache?
I'm low on it, but I'm also low on facial hair in general, which seems to be a controversial stance, but really should not be here in 2019.
I'm okay with him giving it a shot. I will be surprised if this is something that sticks around for too long.
Okay. Other quick hits from the marooning. We had Jeff in his early voiceover saying, of the returning players, their experience can make them a desired ally, or it could make them an easy first vote, as if those two things are equally likely, and it's 50-50, touch and go, we'll see what happens. Which I don't think anyone is really buying. And to a lesser extent, Aubrey had a thing later where she said that it could go either way. They could use my experience and value that, or they could lop my head off. And I believe that she believes that, but and it's right to believe that, right? You want to have that sense of paranoia and always be on the lookout for slings and arrows coming your way. But we know how the historical precedent tends to go here. We know how much danger she might be in.
Let me roll through and see if there are any other exceptions to this. But we are looking at Guatemala with Steph and Bobby John both coming back, both making the merge. Russell Swan misses the merge in Philippines. Both Coach and Ozzy make it there in whatever that one was called, South Pacific. They do technically vote Ozzy out, but that's too. Get him into Redemption Island so he can get back into the merge. So I'm not going to count that one. Or is there anyone other than Russell Swan who has been back in this context that has not made it to the merge as a returnee?
Maybe from international versions or something, but yeah, looking purely at CBS, he is the only one, as far as I know.
That, yeah, seems like a little less than a 50-50 shot of the returnees view being viewed as anything other than pretty valuable allies.
Does that change again on a season where there are two returning players on each tribe, where maybe one of them decides to get frisky and go after the other?
Probably a bit just because of the general aggression I would expect out of a returning player compared to a new player. And typically, when it is this kind of scenario, the returning player is just by themselves on a tribe full of new players. So I guess with that in mind, it does weight slightly heavier in that direction. But I would also feel like that may be counterbalanced by the other returnee feeling like there's almost always going to be value in the returnees sticking together and keeping each other around as potential targets, maybe the wrong word, but just people that would be easy to work with, right?
If one of them does make a move, who do you think it's most likely to be? Because I have an answer that I'm not sure you'll agree with.
Well, the fact that we're seeing a previously or a next time on Survivor where it looks like David is considering the idea of going after Wentworth actually makes me feel like that is less likely to happen than I would have potentially thought in the dark, because David may have been my answer to that question had that not been strongly alluded to in the next time on. What's the person who's standing out for you?
My answer was going to be Joe, because for him in particular, the idea of keeping the others around as a shield for you, it has much less currency, because he's always going to be the biggest threat no matter what. The other returning players, and also every single newbie, is trying to keep Joe around because he is the target. He is the one that all of them can hide behind. So that argument has no hold for him. So why not go after someone who you know is definitely the best player?
Yeah, I actually like that call. And we saw someone on that team echo that same kind of sentiment of I can't really afford to get rid of Joe right now, but I would love to go after Aubrey and to kind of tie this back into the over under on how many people are going to make the merge out of these returnees. I would say that at this point, if any of them were to miss, I do think Aubrey would be the front runner.
What kind of position do you think she's in? Because I was worried as we got 15 minutes into the premiere that the entire premise of the season was just an elaborate joke so that they could invite Aubrey back and give her zero screen time yet again. And it seemed like that was actually coming into play. She did pop up soon after that for a confessional, which basically amounted to, I'm going to keep my head down, see you later. And then she just disappeared again, which I think is probably a smart approach to take. But it does mean that for the Aubrey fans out there, and I know they are legion, they might not get as much of her as they would like, even if she does make a fairly deep run in the season again.
Well, the good news is there's still plenty of time, right? But yeah, would have...
That's exactly what we said in like episode 2 of Game Changers, where it was, okay, well, it's been a little lopsided so far, but I'm sure there's time for these flowers to bloom and for everyone to get their fair share of screen time, and then just nobody did. And but maybe it's the 60 minutes of the premiere messing with my entire sense of time here, but it felt like everybody actually got a fairly even or flat edit. No one really stood out for good or for bad reasons, other than Reem, but that's the token treatment that the first boot tends to get, right? Whereas even the returning players, and even Joe among them, we had a lot of people saying how much they love Joe, which is to be expected, but Joe himself was fairly low-key, and David and Aubrey both made a point of explicitly saying, I'm trying to keep a low profile here, and you can expect that to translate into their edit as well.
Right, who did we even hear that much about personally? We certainly heard from Wendy, and that was a great segment, exploring her Tourette's and dealing with that out there and in the real world as well, and that could potentially be something that continues over the season. We heard a bit about Keith, right, when he was giving the segment, during the segment, I guess, about him practicing swimming and so forth. But those were two people that were also painted as kind of like on the outs, and maybe it's a scenario where they're getting those kind of personal stories in now because they're potentially not going to be there for too much longer, and we're going to have to go back to it more time to get to the people who are going to stick around.
Tying this back to Aubrey quickly, what do you make of her position coming into the season? Because everybody knows who she is and respects her from, well, not enough people on that season respected her, but at least among the public at large, and therefore now this cast at large, people know who she is, they respect her game, they fear her game. So do you think this is going to be another rerun of Game Changers where she just effectively wasn't allowed to play for the entire duration of the season, or has going through that once dulled the perception of her as a threat to such an extent that she maybe now has some more room to maneuver when it comes down to it?
So I think she would be better off if she had gone out and been like the second boot on Game Changers, right? Instead of going deep yet again, but just not able to close it out. I would imagine that her back is probably, come any realistic kind of endgame time, going to be up against the wall, because people know what they're up against when it comes to Aubrey at this point. And I have faith in her to go out there understanding that the target's probably going to be on her back sooner rather than later, and wanting to just keep her head low and develop good social bonds. And I would guess, based on what little we got to see of her in the premiere, that she's off to a relatively good start on that front. But I do think there is almost certainly going to be a time that rolls around where everyone, no matter what has happened in the first 30 days of the game, for instance, understands we're getting too close to day 39 to just keep letting Aubrey go through.
Right. And it's not going to be the way that she was iced out by Sandra, where she was effectively told, you don't get to play this season. No one trusts you. Just go and sit in the corner. And if you're lucky, we won't vote you out. If nothing else, because there is a differential now in terms of power and experience, where Eric, it sounds like, wants to go after Aubrey, but that might not be Eric's call to make. And even if he is able to, or is minded to, try and take that shot, she has a lot more experience and knowledge than he does. And we've seen how it works out in the past for the people who try and get the bright idea of targeting the returning players. So unless that movement has maybe Joe's endorsement or the power of other people behind it, that could fall flat, and that failing might give Aubrey a free pass to the merge, not that she necessarily needs one.
So I would say, to go just kind of back to the idea of returning players playing with newbies and how potentially this could be okay with, you know, an okay scenario for Aubrey for the short term at the very least. I don't know if we've ever put it in these kind of like explicit terms before, but I would imagine you would co-sign the sentiment that if you are a survivor player and you find yourself out there in this kind of scenario, whether it's one returnee on your tribe or two, do everything in your power to get on the good side of those returnees, right?
Oh, I would be too far up their ass before we'd even jumped off the boat. I would be just fully on board 100% from day one, because I think that's, as shameful as that might seem to certain parts of the fan base, or as humiliating as it might be to your ego as a survivor player, that is just the proven way to succeed when you have returning players on your season.
Right. So when everyone kind of knows that, don't you have to feel pretty good about the returnees sticking around for a bit?
You do. But there's always someone who figures that they can be the exception. They can be the trailblazer who overturns all of that precedent.
Jeff Probst thinks it's 50-50 that they're going to be just a juicy steak waiting there to be the first boot.
Well, again, Colin, it either happens or it doesn't. So what more do you want?
Right. Let's get further into something we touched on him finding. But Ron, during the marooning, found the secret advantage. Is it really a secret advantage if, I'm guessing, someone at both of these beaches, once they got back, said, hey, by the way, anyone find anything fun on the boat?
Or when Ron got back to camp after scrabbling around in the dirt and one half of his outfit was covered in soil and the other one wasn't, you think that would raise a few questions, possibly.
So Ron, it's not the legacy advantage. It is a menu of advantages from which he can choose. The items on the table are a reward steal, essentially, an extra vote, and you're going to have to clear this one up for me, Dom. A free immunity that seems non-transferable, and then also all of this is under the caveat of he either has three rounds to choose which one he wants or three rounds to use it. It actually crossed my mind. I'm certainly not taking the extra vote. I don't think it's the worst idea in the world if all of this expires in three rounds to take the reward steal and immediately go report back to the tribe. Hey, gang, I got a secret advantage on the boat. It gave me a list of options, and I took the one that's for the whole team. I turned down the other options, and whenever we show up to a challenge and we definitely want that reward, you just give me the word, and no matter what, we get it. I think I was listening to Know It Alls, and Steven kind of dismissed the reward steal as anything even worth considering. And when I initially heard the set of options, and certainly knowing that all of them could potentially expire soon, I think there could be some value in the reward steal. There's always money in the banana stand, Dom. But speaking of just Ron in general, it at one point made me think of Ron Dogg from Whodunit, which then made me think of Raw Dogg from the Barkley Marathons, which then made me think of this article I read recently about not the Barkley marathons, but this new race that Lazarus has concocted, and just quickly wanted to touch on that and see if you've heard anything about that. And for people unfamiliar with what we're talking about right now, over the Survivor offseason, we did a podcast about a documentary movie called The Barkley Marathons, which is just the most insane 100-plus-mile race you've ever seen in your life. And I read about this different race that Laz also hosts. Do you know what I'm talking about, Dom?
This is a fascinating look into how your mind works, but no, I don't. Fill me in and fill everyone else in.
Yeah, you are right. It really was kind of like an A to E scenario getting from Ron to Lazarus Lake. But
that's the next segment. It's 6 degrees of raw dog. Gradually turning him into someone else.
Yeah. So the way this one works, the Barkley Marathons are five marathons through backwoods Tennessee, and you only have 60 hours to do all five of them. And this one is even more diabolical somehow, which will sound insane when you hear that this is a 4-mile race that the people have to keep doing over and over and over and over and over every hour until there's just one of them left. And for these people, these ultra marathoners, 4 miles is absolutely nothing. So it ends up going hundreds of hours of people just being awake for days and having to run 4 miles every hour on the hour, and it gradually just whittles down to one person.
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that, except definitely check out the Barkley Marathons and hopefully the podcast we did about them as well, if that's your thing.
Yeah, but I really thought that was a diabolical kind of race design there by Laz, and wanted to alert anyone who listened to that podcast of that race as well, because that's hopefully something that's going to get some coverage sometime soon. Dom, anything else before the challenge?
Nothing that comes to mind for me.
All right, let's get into MTV's The Challenge now and your takes on that. No, the Immunity Challenge is a pretty cool kind of standard balance and untying knots and culminating in a puzzle challenge, but it did have a fresh look. I want to give the art department certainly credit where it's due for, after all of these years, finding new ways to use what I would imagine would be the same supplies. They're just staring at a bunch of plywood, trying to figure out new ways to get it to find immunity winners.
Yeah, at this point, all of these challenges under the same umbrella just blur together for me. I couldn't tell you how this one was different from the other 23 examples that we've had in recent memory.
I liked the 3-level balance beam. That was cool.
It was fine. I have no objection to it.
All right. I would like to see you get on that 3-level balance beam sometime, Dom.
Hey, look, I'm not saying I could do the challenge, because that's not going to... No, that would apply for basically none of them. I'm just saying it didn't really stand out to me. It didn't stick in my memory or stick in my craw.
Hey, there was like a... God, what are those things called at the top of ships where you have to climb up to the top and look out and...
A mast?
No, the little perch thing that people go into on the top, at the very top of a ship, so you can see far.
I don't know this Jeopardy clue. I'm sorry.
Okay, you absolutely know what I'm talking about. They had one of those in here that... Dom, I could see you doing well at climbing a ladder and pulling a lever.
Based on what?
Your just kind of inability to perform at the other parts of the challenge, and thus being put there for your team.
I could see myself getting towards the top of that and then falling to an ignominious death.
I could see you being the person who's supposed to be like calling out the solution to the puzzle, but you won't say anything.
This is getting increasingly personal here. I don't like the direction this is going.
I can see you backstabbing your closest ally constantly. Yeah, anyway, we're neither here nor there. The yellow team crushes this challenge, and the blue team is going to lose their first member. And we heard some initial setup about how Reem, Wendy, and Keith now seem to be on the outs on this blue team. And it goes a little bit back and forth between, is it going to be Reem or is it going to be Wendy? But it's pretty overwhelming, right, Dom? The kind of straightforwardness of this eventual Reem boot.
And it was so just depressingly inevitable as well. Like when you saw Keith and Reem and Wendy all there together in the ocean, you could have bet your life savings there and then that one of them was going home. There was no way anything else was conceivably happening.
All right, Colin Stone hyperbole guy. But yeah, no, I'm with you. It certainly, at this point in the episode, seemed like a foregone conclusion that one of that trio is going to end up going. And it really seemed like, again, we heard a little bit about each of their like backgrounds and personal stories. And of the three, Reem seemed to really get the more negative treatment compared to the other two.
And it's not just that it was Keith and Reem and Wendy. It's that it is always the Keith and the Reem and the Wendy. And that this is just, it is a template that we've seen time and time again, and that you can just fit any new season into and be right the vast majority of the time.
No, I totally agree with that. It's certainly frustrating to see this kind of thing happen over and over and over. But it seems like every single season we come in here saying that, and they just completely falls on deaf ears. And I don't mean the listeners, I mean the people in charge.
Right. Although I will say, shout out to Keith for doing great work, not just realizing that he was on that sinking ship, which is more than can be said for a lot of people, but managing to leap off it in time. And I don't know if this is just a temporary thing and he's still going to be in seventh or, you know, whatever the bottom of that group is. But he showed a lot of initiative in doing that. And maybe he's going to be able to work his way into the equation now in a way that he just wouldn't be if he'd stayed out in the ocean there and stuck to his guns.
Yeah, Keith was certainly one of my favorites from this premiere episode. I liked what you said, seeing him recognize that his position was pretty seriously compromised, and as much as he may like Reem and Wendy, the game don't wait.
Yeah, but sure.
Yeah,
Exactly.
yeah, perfect. So what did you think of the conversation we saw between Wendy and David Wright and the War Dog about Wendy talking about, yeah, I know you guys are probably going to be voting for Reem or me, but I'm not going to do that. I really like her, and that's just against what I stand for. And War Dog says, all right, Wendy, it's great to hear from you. I'd like to talk privately with David now, and we'll get back to you. What did you think of that?
We'll issue you your marching orders in a second. Yeah, like the whole thing about staying loyal, I guess it never comes from a place of this is a calculated strategic move. It's just this person is my friend and I'm not going to lie to them. And there's a certain line in the game that I won't cross. And it's not great that that line is coming up on day three, but people play the game with their own value systems. But maybe it does have some value in terms of like, you just broadcast yourself as this open book, as Wendy described herself. You're this loyal person who, if you win her over, then she will go to the wall for you and never vote against you. And that's an appealing thing if you're like a Joe or a Kelly or a David White who expects to be under the gun pretty soon here. But outside of that, she was already in a tough spot, and maybe that just dug her grave even deeper. I don't know.
Yeah, as for I'm with all that for Wendy, and it seems like she's someone who is pretty determined to stay just true to herself out there, which I totally am fine with. But as for the David Wright and War Dog end of that conversation, I thought David did a really strong job handling what I thought was a piece of work that potentially left a bit to be desired here from the War Dog. It really stood out to me when he said, hey, can you go away for a little while so we can talk privately and then get back to you? I certainly understand that this is a heavily edited conversation, and maybe in context that was a totally appropriate thing to say. It just seemed to me like a very hard kind of stance to defend, wanting say like the optics of telling someone we need to talk privately because we don't, I or at least I don't trust you enough to hear what I really think about what you the information you just presented to me. To me, I would say is almost always going to be the wrong move, right?
It's not a great look. And as so often with these things, it's not this example that makes it look so bad. It's that people are falling that away and they realize that you can't be trusted to at least put a brave face on around other people when it comes to it. So later on, if there's a more complicated maneuver that we have to go through, we can't have someone just dragging you away from the conversation to have a one-on-one chat and making it blatantly obvious what's going on.
Right. So I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what becomes of the War Dog, because anyone who is playing like that, I think, is certainly going to be an entertaining player, to say the very least. But I don't know if it's the kind of thing that I would be endorsing in terms of like coaching future players to go out there. I would say I would almost never want to be the person ending a conversation.
Yeah, I'd never actually put it in those terms before, but that sounds right.
Right. All right. And again, kudos to David, I thought, for how he handled what I'm guessing was kind of a startling reaction of Wardog saying, "Hey, I want to talk privately to David." And I thought it was worth noting that after Wendy kind of shuffles away, David just sits stands there, just kind of grinning at Wardog, waiting for him to go first and finding out what this guy wants to say, so I can just yes and whatever that is.
Yeah, David is the guy who is always checking out a position, right? Like
Yes,
every single time he's just gonna wait to see what you're doing, and it works not just as a gameplay move, but also psychologically for him, where he is so anxious and so concerned about saying the wrong thing or coming across in a certain way or making a mistake that if you just wait to see what other people do and mirror that, you can never go too far wrong, because even if they're the ones making a mistake and you copy it, a lot of the time, the blame is going to go on them, and you can say that, oh, you were just trying to fit in and go with the flow.
100%. Yeah. And I was wondering what you thought about how not just this camp scene, but also tribal council, where it seemed like things certainly were not getting any better for Reem either. How all of that was put together with the Edge of Extinction twist in play, compared to how you think it may have looked without that in play. Because I really got the vibe that they wanted to set up the idea of Reem and kind of just vengeance for Reem wanting vengeance and on behalf of like all the people who get voted out in Survivor.
Yeah, Reem was one of those iconic first boots who most of the time would remain just an iconic first boot. But I guess the upside of this Edge of Extinction twist is maybe she'll get to be the iconic first boot who appears in 8 of the 14 episodes on the season.
Well, actually, that's a fun game. What is the over/under for number of episodes Reem could appear in? Because I believe the Edge of Extinction is going to cycle once at the merge and then once again at like final six or final five, which would put anyone who wants it up through like episode 13.
Right, and if you're as thirsty for attention as most of these people undoubtedly are, then if you can rough it out there for a few weeks, then you can guarantee that for yourself. And does it lock in a higher stipend as well? Do we know how that works this season?
I don't know, and I also don't know if people might be less inclined to quit knowing that even though they got voted out on day 26, they would only get like third to last place money because everyone else hasn't quit yet.
I didn't even think about it from that direction. Yeah, because I was thinking if you are the first boot, you can upgrade yourself to a decent payday if you just stick it out there long enough. But there's also the other side, which is you can make it far, and if you go out and everyone else is still technically in the game, then you effectively have been downgraded, right? So you need to still work to get paid.
Yeah, I mean, if you just get your initial placement payment unless you re-enter the game, we're going to have a lot of players in that final Edge of Extinction challenge playing for like $50,000 in equity on that one challenge.
Right. Jeff could say, you are playing for the chance to re-enter the game, a shot at $1 million, also a shot at like an extra $10,000 or whatever.
More than
And
that.
a few thousand more Instagram followers. That's what's on the line here.
Yeah. But to go back to just the idea of potentially editing the stories differently because of Edge of Extinction, I think we could see that coming into play. But I also think, just in general, kind of editing terms, because of the Edge of Extinction, this wasn't a factor in this premiere episode, but starting next week, I'm guessing every single time we're going to have a check-in on what's happening over on Party Island, and that's going to obviously eat up the time that they have for the main story, and I would guess thus kind of force them to be a bit more straightforward about what's going on with the main story because they have less time over which to tell it.
So you're expecting essentially what you see on seasons that have Redemption Island
Yes.
historically.
That probably
Okay.
no. Less time than Redemption Island because we're not going to have to sit through an entire challenge every single week. I don't expect it to be a 10 to 15 minute endeavor every time. I'm hoping, and I'm at this point optimistic that there may be some weeks where we can get away with like 90 seconds, 2 minutes on Party Island?
And maybe this is too cynical of me. I think it heavily depends on who gets sent there.
Okay.
If Joe ends up coming a cropper in the game and he gets sent there, then we are having some extended monologues from Joe. We're getting some really deep, heartfelt confessionals. Yeah, the whole 9 yards. Whereas if it's Reem and Wendy joined to there next week, we'll check in with them and then immediately cut back less than 10 seconds later.
Yeah, I would say, not to get deep into the edit zone, which I don't even think we're going to need to do for this premiere.
I was not planning on doing one. You're welcome to if you like.
We don't, no need. But I would say for the future edit zone, anyone who is not a returnee that is getting a ton of glowing content over on Extinction Island, that should be alarm bells going off.
Let's get in, now that we're on the topic, let's get into one of the theories I've seen surrounding Edge of Extinction then, because I saw Chrissy Hoffbeck say this, and a lot of people have echoed the same thought. What if one of the reasons why this season is not being hyped up as much is because they do expect Edge of Extinction to stick around, but it's for the big blowout returning player season, whether that's season 40 or whatever, where you have all of these big names coming back. You don't want to lose your Ozzy or Richard Hatch or Parvati or whoever it ends up being in the first episode permanently. And this is a great way of ensuring that all of them at least have some screen time for the majority of the season. And so this is like a dry run, if you like. And if it just so happens that Joe ends up winning in large part thanks to this twist, then that's not the worst thing in the world. But the main object here is to see what that would be like in practice before you take such a big gamble on it for what would be its main performance.
If the Edge of Extinction became a regular thing, how would you feel about that? I assume much worse about compared to the alternative, but to me, that might be at the point where we are verging on the territory of this ceasing to be a game of Survivor, if everyone who gets voted out has a bunch of chances to come back.
Yeah, it's a weird matchup of like the Challenge and Survivor and whatever your favorite MTV show from like the early 2010s was. Like it wouldn't be Survivor as we know and love it, but I would still tune in. I would still enjoy it. Probably still enjoy talking about it. But it would definitely warp the fundamental reality of the game in a way that few other things could.
Yeah, and actually, you just name checked Parvati, and when I was thinking earlier about War Dog looking and sounding so much like Tony, and I felt like that's a genuine kind of handicap. One other thought that I had was, do you feel like if someone were to enter the game with a like iconic Survivor name like Parvati, they would be at a disadvantage?
What if on the season there was an Aubrey with an E and she became the first target, just so there wouldn't be any confusion with how the spelling goes?
Yeah, well, the conclusion that I came to was I think you could get away with pretty much any name other than I genuinely think a lot of Survivor superfans would have a hard time if they were unsure about how trustworthy you were, erring on the side of good if your name is Russell.
Huh.
I could see them talking themselves into the producers like wanting another evil Russell.
Or if there are any more Robs, they have a pretty tough pedigree to live up to, whichever way they slice it.
There will be more Robs.
You think?
Rob may be the number one most popular name in the history of Survivor.
Yeah, but most of those were like 15 years ago at this point.
It depends on how many times we're counting Boston Rob.
Yeah, okay. Boston Rob by himself is the most popular name in the history of Survivor. That's really not saying anything.
I certainly agree that if you come out calling yourself Boston Rob, you're going to have an uphill battle.
What if you are from Boston and you have the hat and the accent and everything, but you just don't call yourself Boston Rob? Like, is there any way of avoiding that that caricature?
Well, that's what I'm essentially saying about War Dog, is when you look and sound that much like Tony, I feel like people who have seen Tony play are going to be very skeptical.
Are we just saying all bald people look the same now, or do you think he actually does resemble Tony?
I am not being baldist here. There is no question that he not only physically resembles, but his voice sounds so much like Tony, too.
Does his playstyle resemble Tony so far?
So far, it seems like he's going out pretty hard. I mean, we haven't seen him spy shacking, but I'm not putting it out of his range just yet. All right, well, enough fond memories of Tony for now. Dom, what else from this episode?
Well, I thought you would be completely insufferable about the return of your girl Wentworth, and maybe you weren't insufferable for other reasons, but so far her name has not graced your lips. So what was your take on her debut here?
I thought she looked good. I thought she had...
Well, we know
okay.
that, Colin.
Okay, Dom. She's a married woman, I think. I hope not. But
yes,
I hope the divorce is... All right. Shouldn't say that. Shouldn't put that out right. there. No, I thought Wentworth did a solid job by all accounts, other than on that balance beam. But she got up like a trooper and now has a pretty boss kind of battle wound for potentially the rest of the game.
Right. I hope that scar heals pretty soonish. But she had an interesting quote early on where she said that she failed before because she was closed off. She didn't open up to people. And this time she wants to make those relationships and make people feel really close to her, which... Firstly, it's a lot easier when they want to be that close to you because they've been your fangirls for God knows how long now. But also, it's an interesting diagnosis of why she failed in her previous seasons, right? Because if you asked her back in 2014 after she came off San Juan del Sur, or in 2015 after she came off Cambodia, I don't know if that's one of the things she would have attributed it to. I mean, maybe it was, and I'm just misremembering, but it felt like that's a way of kind of leading into something that she wanted to do or try anyway.
Well, we talked about Aubrey and the perception that we see her potentially having to overcome later on in the game, and possibly that just being too much no matter what she does, unless she like runs the table in immunities to stay safe, people just being unwilling to let her keep going and make another finals. And I would imagine it for most people is going without saying that when they want Joe around for a while, but no one in their right mind is going to let that man touch any sort of Survivor endgame. Although this season, they're not going to have much say in the matter. But what do you think about Kelly and I guess David as well in terms of their kind of meta and how they're going to be perceived if they do find themselves deep in the game again?
Kelly is either in the best possible position or somewhere a little bit precarious, because I can't tell if this level of fandom that people have for her is just going to be the kind of thing where it blinds them to how threatening she really is, or if they look around them and they see that everybody else feels the same way about Kelly that they do, and therefore we need to get rid of her. Now, in fairness, like, people should have said that about Kim or Boston Rob on his fourth time, or really any of these dominant players, and they very rarely do. So maybe she just gets away with it and it's an easy path for her. But I don't know. It's kind of up in the air for me still. We'll have to see how people other than the likes of Lauren end up treating her.
Right. For both Kelly and David, I would say I could easily see it going either way, that they are able to reintegrate with these new players and kind of sell them on the idea that they're there along for essentially the same ride as the rest of the group. And I don't know if they're going to necessarily be facing the same kind of endgame target and pressure that I would imagine Joe and Aubrey are going to almost 100% of the time that they make it. But if we do get there and it turns out that David and Wentworth are facing that exact same kind of heat, certainly wouldn't blame any of those new players, and it wouldn't surprise me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So the only other thing that I had from this episode was actually, I will say, there is one name I want to put out there in, I guess, somewhat edit zone kind of context. Just, I would say, almost literally the entire cast had a roughly equal premiere for me, but I guess now would be the time, if you don't want to get into the mini edit zone, he is Dom HRV on Twitter. I am at Colin Stone. Email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com is the show. And then also, hey, yeah, speaking of patreon.com/DomandColin, we are doing weekly bonus episodes over there, currently going through the early days of Survivor Fiji. But now I think would be the kind of mini edit zone time, so tune out now if you don't want to hear it. Dom, actually, before I give the name that I had, did anyone out of these new players stand out at all to you?
None of the new players stood out to me, but I think where you're going with this, assuming you're going for a returnee here, is the opposite principle does seem to apply, where if one of them were to go on to win, how would their edit look? And in some of their cases, I think it would look pretty different.
Okay, so the one name that I do have is a newbie, and because I'm excluding the returnees, I think any of the returnees could still easily be in the mix. Other than I'm not so sure an Aubrey Wynn would look like this a ton of the time in the premiere. I don't know about that one.
And it's so frustrating as well, especially coming off Game Changers, where you could tell, okay, this is a done deal, maybe next season, right? And now we get to next season, and it feels like within 15 minutes, because we haven't seen anything from her yet, we're already rotting her out, and that's a really annoying spot to have to be in.
I agree. But here we are nonetheless, and the other three returnees, I think, are absolutely in the mix, and I would probably say had the three best episodes, other than potentially this one person who really stood out to me, although I will absolutely acknowledge that it seems like he has the exact same kind of like sense of humor as I do. And
Okay, I was going to ask if I could guess, and I was going to guess a woman. So thank you for ruling that out and sparing me the embarrassment.
any
But
guesses yet?
now that you've narrowed it down, can I guess Rick?
It is Rick.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought Rick had a very good premiere. We got to see plenty of Rick, and he seemed very funny and had his a good head on his shoulders all the time. In particular, when he was kind of alone at the water well with the group of three that was on the outs, we saw him in a pretty tricky situation, and I thought he handled that well. He seemed to really genuinely come across just glowing throughout a lot of this premiere, and he really stood out to me among the new players. And also, just quick sidebar. I, for anyone who doesn't know, for several years actually worked at a TV station and worked in TV news. And I saw before this Survivor season started, the weather guy from that station, who's I'm Facebook friends with and worked next to for many years, posted on his own like personal feed, "Hey, just want to give a quick like message of support to my buddy Rick, who's about to go live his finally get to play Survivor and live his dream." And I saw it was this guy Rick who's about to come up on this next season of Survivor 38, which was right around the corner at the time. And it suddenly all kind of clicked with me that that weather guy that I had worked with before he had that job was down south and must have been the weather guy with Rick, and then like worked with Rick and then came and worked at the place I worked.
Okay.
All right, great, Dom. Big reaction to the
No,
story. I thought that was
I
cool.
people have colleagues. I don't know. I'm ready for the punchline here.
That is it. That's cool. That this random weather guy had just so happened.
What's the payoff here?
Okay,
What's
well,
the
hey, I'm 2 degrees of separation from Rick, so I guess for personal reasons, also got I guess a little bit of skin in the Rick game, got just third hand. But there
Okay.
you go. So Rick would be my pick through episode one of the newbies.
Rick's your pick? Is that like a button saying or something?
We'll work on this the catchphrase for next
We
week.
can get a bumper sticker in the works for sure. But all I'll say is, if I was the editors and Rick was our winner, I definitely would have included that war dog joke on the marooning. To be fair, I would also include that if he weren't the winner, and they're the seasoned professionals, and I'm not. So who am I to tell them how to do their jobs?
Yeah, no newbies really jumped off the page to you?
I guess I thought Julie was memorable, but maybe not in a winner capacity.
What's the redheaded girl's name?
Victoria. Yeah,
Victoria,
she
I thought
was good, I
was
thought.
good for what was she what little we saw.
I'll also mention Aurora, who had a fairly quiet episode, but the one piece that she did get, I thought was like winner-esque material and pretty compelling in its own right.
I've been waiting my entire life to hear your British accent
Oh,
say
God.
Aurora. No, you're gonna love this because I was tremendously disappointed. I thought that was gonna be so much
Wow.
cooler.
I'm meant to be glad that you're disappointed.
Yeah.
That's why.
Because I'm not mocking your accent over it.
I just want you to be happy, Colin.
Then say Aurora in a funnier way.
Aurora. You can really lean into it, like Aurora.
Yeah, all right. We'll work on that. We
Fine.
got hopefully a lot of season left with Aurora. It definitely, I want to say, seemed like a solid enough, if not above average, kind of newbie cast. I just really wish it were an environment where we could see more of them and having instead of having to spend so much time on so many returnees.
Sure.
Okay, Dom
I
hates
no,
everything.
I don't hate everything. My concern is that when the episode feels like it's just going through the motions, then it's easy for discussions about the episode to also feel like they're just going through the motions. And I don't want to turn into that. And it's an easy thing to lapse into sometimes. But hopefully we can still have fun doing this and other people can still get something out of listening to it.
Yeah, I would say we probably covered a lot of topics today that are not going to be addressed on the other 30 Survivor podcasts. So mission accomplished.
For better or for worse.
Right, yes. Exactly. You take the good with the bad when in that capacity. Dom, anything else?
No, I'm all good for now.
All right. Well, once again, he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. And one more time, you can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. Thank you guys so much for making it this far. I'm sure we'll be back next week with more Survivor 38. Take care, everybody.